Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really pivotal case out of the Ninth Circuit, United States v. Zuniga.
That's right.
This decision, it's from 1993, and it offers some incredibly important lessons about jury instructions.
Yeah.
Especially when a defendant presents an alibi.
Yeah, a crucial area.
For you listening in, you actually flagged this case for us, so get ready. We're going to see how appellate courts really act as a critical safeguard for fairness in our legal system.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission, you know, in this deep dive is to unpack the core legal principles set up in Zuniga, specifically looking at a defendant's right to a specific jury instruction on their alibi.
Exactly. And what Zuniga really tells us, I think, and why it's so impactful is that it acts as a check on judicial discretion at the trial level.
Okay.
It sort of prevents a judge's personal feeling about the evidence, you know, how strong they think it is, from undermining a defendant's fundamental right to have their defense considered by the jury, but under the correct legal framework.
So it's like a safeguard against bias, maybe even unintentional bias.
Precisely. Safeguard against bias potentially creeping into the jury's deliberations. So let's get into the facts of the case itself.
Okay, sounds good. So Juan Carlos Zuniga was convicted of robbing a bank in Phoenix, Arizona. The date was April 19th, 1991, and the robbery happened around, what, 5.45 p.m.?
That's right, late afternoon. Now, the prosecution came at him with several pieces of evidence. The government built a case with, like, multiple strands.
Right.
They traced the getaway car to a man named Andres Portal, who testified that Zuniga was in the car with him.
Okay, so Portal places him there.
Yes. And Portal, along with another person in the car, Damiso Oliveira, they both stated that Zuniga was the only one who actually went into the bank.
Ah, okay.
They also said they drove around with him afterwards for about 35 to 40 minutes.
And there was physical evidence too, wasn't there? Something about a shirt.
Yeah, exactly. They found a striped shirt in Zuniga's apartment that matched the description of what the robber was wearing.
Okay.
Plus, a bank teller picked Zuniga out of a photo lineup.
And wasn't there something else? A statement he supposedly made.
Right. Kind of an interesting tidbit. A police officer claimed Zuniga admitted to being in a surveillance photo. But importantly, this was unrecorded and no other officers backed up that claim.
Hmm. Uncorroborated.
Hmm.
Okay. So that's the prosecution's side. What about the defense?
Well, the defense presented a direct counter, an alibi. Zuniga's wife, Tammy Woods, she testified that her husband was actually at home with their baby right around the time the robbery was happening.
When exactly did she say she got home?
She said she got home from work between 5.15 p.m. and 6.0 p.m. that day, and he was there.
So smack bang in the middle of the relevant time frame.
Pretty much. So you have the prosecution laying out their case and the defense saying, nope, he was somewhere else.
Now, given this alibi evidence, the defense actually asked the trial judge for a specific instruction for the jury on how to consider it, right?
They did. They requested a specific jury instruction focusing on the alibi defense, but the judge refused to give it.
Wow. That seems like a really critical moment in the trial.
It absolutely was. And that refusal became the central legal issue when Zuniga appealed his conviction up to the Ninth Circuit.
So the main question on appeal was basically, was the judge wrong to deny that instruction? And if so, was it a big enough deal to reverse the conviction?
That's the core question, exactly. Did the trial court's decision not to give that specific alibi instruction constitute reversible error?
And what did the Ninth Circuit end up deciding? Did they agree with Zuniga?
They did. The appellate court held that the district court did make a mistake, a serious mistake, actually. They called it reversible error.
So they overturned the conviction?
Yes. They overturned Zuniga's conviction based on that error.
Okay, so the trial judge says no instruction. Ninth Circuit says that was wrong. What was their reasoning? Why was leaving out that instruction such a significant problem?
Well, the Ninth Circuit really hammered home a fundamental principle. A defendant is entitled to have the jury instructed on their theory of defense.
Wow.
If that theory has some basis, some foundation in the evidence presented at trial. And this holds true even if that evidence seems, you know, weak or inconsistent. Or even if the judge personally finds it kind of doubtful.
So as long as there's something in the record supporting it.
Exactly. As long as there's some foundation in the evidence, the defendant is entitled to that instruction, the judge doesn't get to sort of prejudge the credibility for the jury.
That makes sense conceptually. You want the jury to weigh everything.
Yeah.
But why was the alibi instruction specifically so crucial here? What was the big risk?
The Ninth Circuit really zeroed in on the risk of juror misunderstanding. They were concerned that without a specific instruction explaining how an alibi works legally, jurors might wrongly assume that the defendant had the responsibility, the burden of proving his alibi was true.
Ah, okay. Like they might think, well, his wife testified, but she didn't totally convince me, so I guess the alibi failed and he must be guilty.
Precisely. That's the danger. The lack of that specific instruction could inadvertently shift the burden of proof in the jurors' minds,
making it seem like the defense had to prove he wasn't there, instead of the prosecution proving he was.
Exactly right. The Ninth Circuit emphasized that in our system, the government always has the heavy burden of proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And that includes disproving the defendant's alibi beyond a reasonable doubt.
So the alibi isn't something the defendant has to, like, affirmatively prove to win.
No, it's not an affirmative defense in that sense. It's simply evidence that if the jury believes it, or even if it just raises a question in their minds, could create reasonable doubt about the prosecution's case.
Okay, that distinction is key.
Think of it like this. The prosecution has to build this solid wall of evidence proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. The alibi is like introducing evidence that might show a crack in that wall.
Right.
The defense doesn't have to build their own wall proving the alibi. They just need to present something that might make the jury doubt the strength of the prosecution's wall. The alibi instruction makes sure the jury understands that's how they should evaluate it. Does it create reasonable doubt?
And didn't they specifically quote one of the judges, Judge Pregerson, on this point?
They did, yes. Judge Pregerson made a really sharp observation. He said that a juror, unschooled in the law's intricacies, may interpret a failure to prove the alibi defense as proof of the defendant's guilt.
That nails it, doesn't it?
It really gets to the heart of why the instruction is so critical. It's about making sure the jury is operating with the correct legal rules when they deliberate.
So the consequence of the trial court making this mistake, it wasn't just a minor error.
Oh, no, far from it. The Ninth Circuit classified the failure to give the alibi instruction in this specific context as reversible error per se.
Reversible error per se. Okay, break that down for us. Why is that phrasing so significant?
Okay, so reversible error per se is a big deal. It means the error is considered so fundamental, so damaging to the fairness of the trial, that it automatically requires the conviction to be reversed. The appellate court doesn't even need to do a separate analysis of whether the error was harmless, you know, whether the outcome would have been the same anyway.
So it's automatic reversal.
In this instance, yes. It's an automatic ground for reversal because it directly impacted Zuniga's fundamental right to present his defense and have the jury properly instructed on the law related to that defense.
Why is that right considered so fundamental that its violation triggers this automatic reversal?
Because the right to present a defense, and crucially, to have the jury understand the legal significance of that defense through proper instructions, is just core to the whole idea of a fair trial in our adversarial system.
Okay.
Without that, the whole process is potentially undermined. So it's not just about whether the outcome might have changed, it's about protecting the integrity of the process itself.
Got it. So let's try to boil this down. What's the single most important legal principle that Zuniga really locks in place?
The core takeaway, I'd say, is this. A defendant has a right to a specific jury instruction on their theory of the case, including an alibi, if that theory is legally sound, and has any foundation in the evidence presented at trial.
Even weak or inconsistent evidence.
Doesn't matter how strong or weak it seems. If there's some basis for it, the instruction should be given. And, specifically for alibis, failing to give that instruction when there is supporting evidence is reversible error, period.
Okay. So thinking practically, what does this ruling mean for lawyers actually in the courtroom? What are the implications for defense attorneys?
Well, for defense attorneys, Zuniga is a huge reminder. It underscores how absolutely critical it is to proactively request specific jury instructions that match your client's defense theory.
Even if the evidence seems a bit shaky.
Especially then, maybe. You have to be diligent, make sure the judge knows they have to give the instruction if there's any basis for it in the record. Don't just assume the general instructions on reasonable doubt are enough for something specific like an alibi. You need to ask for that instruction.
Makes sense. Be specific. Put it on the record.
Yeah.
What about for the prosecutors? How does Zuniga affect their job?
For prosecutors, Zuniga serves as a really clear, firm reminder. The burden of disproving an alibi beyond a reasonable doubt rests squarely, 100%, with the government. An alibi isn't some kind of extra hurdle the defense has to clear to get an acquittal. It's just part of the total picture the jury looks at to decide if the government met its very high burden of proof.
So prosecutors need to be ready to tackle the alibi evidence directly.
Absolutely. They need to anticipate it, address it, and try to refute it as part of their overall case demonstrating guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. They can't just ignore it and hope the jury does too.
Okay, so wrapping this up, our deep dive into United States v. Zuniga really highlights just how crucial jury instructions are for a fair trial, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. It shows it's not enough just to throw evidence at the jury.
Right. They need the legal roadmap, the proper framework, to understand how to evaluate that evidence correctly. Especially for something like an alibi, which can completely change the outcome.
Exactly. And Zuniga shows that even what might seem like a minor piece of defense evidence, like the wife's testimony here, can trigger this absolute necessity for specific legal guidance from the judge to the jury.
It really makes you think, doesn't it, about the broader implications. Like, how might this standard for requiring instructions impact other defenses?
Yeah. Or how does it shape the way a defendant gets to tell their side of the story in court? It's a good question.
And maybe, what does Zuniga, at its core, really tell us about those fundamental ideas of fairness and due process in our legal system? Something definitely worth mulling over.
Absolutely. It's a critical piece of the puzzle in understanding how our criminal justice system strives, or at least is supposed to strive, for fairness. Definitely food for thought.